Fuck it. We deserve this win, man.
Welcome to your recap for getting streak snapped. It's the Purple and Black Pill. Hello, friends. My name is Ty Foster. I have been riding the wave of Sacramento Kings fandom since the early 1990s. Joining me, my best friend, a man who can claim the same. It's Duncan Smith. Hello, Duncan.
Hi, Ty.
And in the third chair tonight, second time challenge coin collector of Defector.com, please welcome Patrick Redford. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to be back. Can't wait to talk about Kings Pelicans. It's got so much to dig into.
It's just a great feeling. You know, we were just riding a beautiful 6-game winning streak. We could have recorded last night, but instead we recorded tonight after a big time, all time classic wet fart of a game. It's all right. These things happen. Before we get going, I just wanted to alert our listeners to the fact that Patrick Redford works for Defector.com, a very cool website. I'm a subscriber to said website. I said this last time Patrick was on when Duncan wasn't here. Patrick was a very capable co-host for me that evening. The thing that's cool about Defector, it's collectively owned by its employees. And that means that if you subscribe, you get to be their boss, like 1/20,000th of their boss. And I think that's a pretty good pitch.
Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah, if you guys did collective action, you could really mess with us, but thankfully no one's done that yet. Our subs haven't unionized.
Should we explore that? Like, what are the best ways to ruin Defector?
I guess it's like you could organize in the comments section, but then to comment, you have to pay for like a higher tier of subscription. So in doing so, if the organization doesn't work, it'll totally backfire. So I encourage those who are listening, they should try that. Upgrade your subs, I guess.
One thing that Americans are really good at is collective action. So I feel good about those our chances there. Yeah. something else I wanted to say on the Defector level, Patrick, before we dive into tonight's monstrosity. Drew McGarry works there. Drew McGarry, of course, a great writer. But more importantly, from my perspective, an Andrew WK fan. Andrew WK is my favorite living artist. So just if it ever comes up in the Slack or whatever, let him know he's got a Brother Seamus in me.
I'll let him know his Slack avatar has been the Andrew WK album cover the entire time I've worked with him, like almost a decade. Never changed it. Like anytime we've started, when we were in Exile Slack and then now Defector Slack, it's just the first thing he does. Never changed it. So
this is how I'm going to get him on the pod. It's I'm not kidding. I'm not like people think that Andrew WK is a joke. To me, he's not. He's a religion.
It's always time to party.
That's exactly right. It's very deep to me. It's very spiritual. Anyway. So we're going to get into the good stuff in a second, but we need to just kind of get the doo-doo out of the way fast. We're recording here Monday night just after the Kings laid a big old egg against New Orleans. They lost 93-129, looked real sleepy out there, started out pretty well, good team defense, you know, some energy, but just couldn't shoot. Fox looked gassed for once, first bad game he's played all season. Any useful takeaways from either of you guys?
What do you say when you lose by 40 points or whatever it was, 36 points?
Finally, Harrison Barnes had a good game.
Hey,
here we go. We found our silver lining. it's tough. Like, obviously, when you have been winning and kind of rolling in the way that the Kings have, you leave a little bit of grace for having a letdown game. But that was a tough one. It's pretty messy.
Yeah, the schedule loss is one thing. The shooting luck is another. And then just kind of having, I feel like the Kings have always played the Pelicans weird over the past few years. Like there was that one hyper blowout when they didn't have anyone last year. And then they lost a stupid one in New Orleans, if I recall correctly. And Zion is just like the exact type of guy who just murders this team. Like that second quarter run, there are moments where he'll get these drives and he's like forced to take a dribble with his right hand once. And you think like, okay, surely he's just going to take the open layup with his right hand. He kind of jumps like away from the hoop to shoot with his left. And you're just like, this wouldn't work if he wasn't the density of a neutron star. But like, you put Harrison Barnes or like, for some reason, Kevin Herter on him. And it's like, he's just going to get to the rack every time.
Yeah, clearly Mike had made the decision to neutralize Ingram with Keegan because Keegan is now apparently our best front court on ball defender. And he looked fantastic on Ingram. And then he went out and Ingram immediately scored 18 in the third. And it was like, well, this one's maybe not our night.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing. I wanted to brush this off, and I'm going to find the cope eventually to do this, probably another few hours. But like, I wanted to just brush this off as like, you know, schedule loss, whatever. But a lot of guys keep getting injured, and it's getting to the point, like, you know, you don't want to have the Jalen Slauson conversation basically at any point in the season, but like, it's November.
You don't want to have the Jalen Slauson as a starter conversation, and we might be getting there.
Kessler, I thought Kessler Edwards had two good defensive plays tonight. That was nice.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, how worried are you guys about this sort of spate of injuries? And especially like framed within the context of Kings fans spending the 2 weeks before the season getting really mad that anyone would point out that they got good injury luck last season as this like absurdist thing that you could only say if you're a hater and have never been to SAC. Like, I don't know. How does this all feel?
Obviously, nobody is allowed to say anything bad about the Kings because we're still the golden child of the NBA. So that's we're right. Not giving that up until somebody takes it. But I do feel like they talk about banking wins for the playoffs. I feel like maybe we banked some wins for the injury bad luck with that win streak. So like, as long as everything is sort of relatively minor that's going on, like I hate the idea of Keegan just having a nagging back injury for the rest of the season or something, but I can kind of squint and see a way that, you know, they live without the group of guys that is injured right now for a few games and then get back into that unusual injury luck.
Hopefully.
I actually have a list here in front of me of the injured players. So Herter was injured last night. It's a finger injury. It looked apparently as minor because he was back tonight and his shot looked fine. Keon Ellis is out. Sasha Vezenkov is out. Duarte got hurt tonight, hurt his hand. Keegan got hurt tonight, back. We don't really know anything about either of those yet. Alex Len is out for 6 to 8 weeks with a high ankle sprain, which is you don't like to see. And then Trey Lyles, you know, it has been out all season. Apparently he was playing 5-on-5 before the game tonight, so that's a good sign. We badly need him, man. He's going to add an element that we haven't seen at all this year because hopefully JaVale McGee will be running the point just a little bit less.
The man's decision making. It's the Lyles Len of those. There's, you know, there's like the group of wings and stuff. And I think if hopefully the Duarte thing is minor enough that everyone will be able to play a little bit, it's the lack of like a functional backup center, as in like a guy who can make a decision at any point in the game, that worries me. Like Lyles is so perfect for what the team needs there. And I think it's been a big few games of the JaVale McGee experience really tiring. Like the worst play from that Mavericks game was when he got it. He walked up the court dribbling. Luka Doncic is just staring him in the face like, I know he's going to do something stupid. JaVale basically makes eye contact with him and just throws him the ball. Just a baffling play. Yeah, and then tonight, just it's not great.
He's our Whiteside child brain. You know, it's like you're literally spinning a roulette wheel on both offense and defense every single play with JaVale McGee. For example, tonight he did, I don't know, 5 or 6 of the stupidest things I've ever seen. And then he also had in the post a behind the back dime to, I forget who it was. I think Davion or something.
Yeah.
That was like, just like would have been an astonishing play if Fox did it. And you're like, who, what is this person? Like,
feels like it's on accident.
Yeah.
He also had a block on Jordan Hawkins in the first quarter that I swear was like the most obvious missed goaltend I've ever seen. Like the ball seemed to be like at the rim basically when he did it.
Man, Jordan Hawkins sideline. I had not seen him yet. He looks like he's about 12. And I was like, oh man, that guy looks like he's 12. And then I saw him move like De'Aaron Fox on a fast break. And I was like, uh-oh, 12-year-olds are youthful.
I will say that if we hadn't had that unfortunate injury to Len and our depth issues at center, we wouldn't have gotten to see a guy who I forgot was on the Kings, and I have to look at my phone to say his name. It's Philip Petrusev?
Philip Dynamite.
Yeah, I knew. I was like, okay, how excited should I get about this guy when they made the stupid trade? Which I haven't followed this, but there's fans are mad about because it was something about not guaranteeing Keon Ellis's contract or something. I don't know. But the point is, I watched his YouTube reel and it included him making free throws, which is when I knew there's no reason to get too excited about this one.
There's Kings fans online who, like, when Monty makes one of these random ass bargain bin, like, cash considerations deals for some guy no one's ever heard of, somehow just get super mad no matter what. they're like, oh, this means that we're broke, or this means that we're fucking not serious.
I have a theory on this.
Please.
When the team's going like 28 and 54 every single year, you just kind of get into these weird, like, okay, the next young guy, next second round cast off we find could be the one. And I think just if you're going to stick around long enough, you kind of have to have some reason to. And then getting totally sicko mode and like end of roster moves allows you to like read into it way too much. Which, like, now that there are good players on the team, I feel like, I don't know, maybe let that one go.
Yeah, we don't have to, like, have this conversation about what if Nimi Keita is actually Hakeem Olajuwon. Like,
yeah, it's fine.
There's a reason that he got picked 56th or whatever. Like, we're not always going to be right with those end of bench decisions. Like, it's hard to make those things and find the guys that overachieve that are basically you're pulling them off of the bargain bin. But, like, you have to just allow for the fact that probably none of them are a huge missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's tankathon institutionalization, I think is a decent way to put it.
Yeah. I don't want to go on too far of a tangent here, but as a big draft person, you get into these weird sort of like epistemological cul-de-sacs, basically, where you're like reading about traits, you're like watching YouTube videos of guys, and you just think like, okay, good secondary creation, like, solid point of attack, great offensive rebounding. Like, you make these list of traits in your heads and you think of everyone as like their prospect tools and then they're like upsides. And then you actually watch them play like a minute of NBA basketball against actual veterans and realize like how nebulous and difficult and like random, not random, but just like unpredictable so much of this stuff is. And the first few games of the season are always a shock to me since I spend, you know, the whole summer looking at like Trace Jackson Davis tape or whatever to just realize like, oh yeah, like Marcus Morris would smoke all these guys in one-on-one kind of for no reason. Like,
yeah, there's a reason that JaVale McGee, in spite of being an absolute psycho, has been in the NBA for 16 years. Like, there are a lot of people who have come and gone that have those tools, you know, Willie Cauley-Stein.
Trilly.
But there's something to be said for just being able to play basketball outside of like the traits.
I was thinking about him watching Derek Lively in the Mavericks game where it's like Lively, you know, very athletic, very tall, but he kind of already has something that is extremely important for big men that Willie Cauley-Stein never at any point in his career learned, just knowing where to stand. Like, he was just in the right place doing the right thing. Like, just so simple, but so many big men just never learned that.
Yeah. Also not falling over if somebody touches you.
Yeah.
Which Willie never learned.
Was he the sixth pick?
Yep.
Yeah, don't love that. Anyway.
Yeah, we passed on Emmanuel Mudiay to get Willie Cauley-Stein. What a travesty.
And I was bummed as another draft weirdo. I was like, oof, you're going to regret this Mudiay mistake.
Yeah. I didn't know anything about the draft, and I never do. So I'm blissfully ignorant. This, my role is to smoke weed and experience vibes.
You should check out this this rookie the Spurs have, French guy. Look him up. You'll thank me later.
Interesting.
He's got talent.
Speaking of which, we played against that guy. Let's go back and think about some better times for a moment, shall we?
Yeah. I got nothing else on this Pelicans game. Just happy it's over.
Yeah. I think we've said enough at this point. We've given as much effort as the Kings gave tonight so far. So I think we're all right. Wednesday, the Kings really took it to the Lakers. Ooh, baby. My least favorite player in the league, Anthony Davis, got absolutely bum rushed by our boy Domantas Sabonis, and it felt fantastic.
It was so good.
I don't know, like, on that one, I'm not sure if it's just Anthony Davis being sort of a especially wimpy, or I used to really worry about those matchups where Sabonis was giving up a lot of length, you know, and it seems like maybe he's turned a corner where he's good enough at this point at being able to like put a shoulder or an elbow or a hip into whoever he needs to and move them off of the spot so that like that shot blocking length is not completely, you know, taking away his scoring game. Like, he can always pass, he can always set screens, but that scoring can be missing sometimes if he doesn't feel like he can get the ball over the top of the defender. And it seems like with Davis, he really wasn't having that problem.
Yeah. And as like we've seen in the three bad games he's had this year and in the playoffs last year, like, the type of guy that he struggles with more is like the person he can't bully, and that list is like very short. And I was sort of shocked to see Alper and Şengün do pretty well against him in those two games. I mean, there was There were a lot of circumstances also there that were pretty screwed up, but yeah, he's never lost to Anthony Davis in his career somehow. That's incredible.
Yeah, he's 8-0.
Yeah, I mean, that game and the Cavs game were pretty great, just in the sense that like the Kings never, ever, ever got like bothered out of playing their style. You saw that against the Mavericks, but like to a less pronounced degree, where like the Cavs were hitting kind of a lot of random junk and stuff, but like at no point were you ever worried that they were going to move the Kings off of their tempo. And like, I think that's the most encouraging thing through the 6-game win streak to me. I mean, I guess it sort of started without Fox, but like when Fox is in there, they play with this like just nutty pace, especially in the half court. And I guess we didn't see it tonight for other obvious reasons, but like that 6 games against those level of defensive teams was just so impressive, because like when they can play their style, it's really hard to imagine many teams that can like hang when they're able to do that. It's just like the trick is being able to do that. And like, I don't know, there was just a lot to like.
It requires a tremendous amount of energy to give enough defensive effort to like beat a team like Dallas the way that we did, you know, given that hyperspace pace that you're talking about. But what we ran into tonight, sorry to reference this game again, but what we ran into tonight was real, real, real big boys, and more than one of them. And that's a problem for us.
I am starting to function in the usual way. Everything is so provocative. Very, very temporary. I shall walk out of this place.
Speaking of another long boy who managed to kind of go off but didn't get his team a win against us, Friday we played San Antonio, 129. We beat them 129-120 in the vaunted in-season tournament, NBA in-season tournament, greatest branding of all time. Man, the funniest shit about the in-season tournament is those shirts that they make everybody wear that say the NBA in-season tournament on them.
It's such a bad name. It's like you're literally just describing the thing with the name. Like, you should take a little more, like one half layer of abstraction could really help.
I can't believe Adam Silver didn't hook his wagon to like some fucking pharmaceutical with this and call it like the Zyprexa fucking in season.
That would be cooler.
I know.
Well, they do always, when they talk about the in season tournament, they always compare it to like European soccer league tournaments, and all of those have like some brand attached to it, you know, like Carlsberg Cup is just a beer company, right?
Yeah, like, the Carabao Cup, as it's now called.
Sorry, Carabao Cup,
some extremely off-brand energy drink. But that's like funny, like that's charming when they do it that way. Like the NBA Cup was right there and people spent the whole summer calling it that, and then they just I don't know, it's weird.
I think it should be the Pizza Guy's Cup, the Beach Hut Deli Cup, you know?
I mean, honestly, it would be fine.
I'd be into it. Like, I mean, they keep talking about this partnership with the Sacramento Airport, which is just one of the most baffling, like they're like lauding it as one of the first partnerships between a team and an airport, and the statement's just like, well, as you know, we fly to our road games, and when we leave, it's just, it's all weird. But
the fuck does an airport... Why does an airport need to advertise in Sacramento? If you need to fly, you can only go to one place.
Exactly.
Come fly the friendly skies.
On that Spurs game, I'm glad it was so close because we got to see Fox do some of just the nastiest things in that fourth quarter. But it was only close. I guess this is some bias here, but just a real bullshit Zach Collins game. Just 20 of the most, or 25 of the most unethical points. Like, I think at one point he's like 4 for 4 from three. He was like kind of stepping into some kind of weirdly swaggy like elbow jumpers and stuff. And that's just like, that's slop. That's not real.
You can't let a January 6th ass looking motherfucker like that go off on you. That's not cool. Yeah, the Kings started off that game down 25-5. And I was watching at a bar and I was like, time to continue drinking a lot. And then they turned it around.
Yeah, I really thought that the game we had tonight was going to be what the Spurs game was, but they showed us something.
Yeah, I was like, Kings ahead at the end of the first quarter. Okay, they've taken the Pelicans' best punch, and now it's time to do the thing. But
we said we were going to shut the fuck up about this game, guys. Come on.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's good. It's good framing though, because I think this is the first, like, you know, the first playoff, whatever, yada yada yada. This is the first time that fans have like expectations, and there's like a real. I've just noticed this sort of like as an editor, sort of a stylistic tendency online. And obviously there's some jokingness to this, but like, if the Kings win two in a row, it's like we're talking about, okay, how could they beat the Nuggets in the Western Conference Finals? You know, this team is ready to contend right now. And if they lose one game that like they should lose, it's just like, oh, they're on serious. The 9 seed, the play-in. Oh, no, this is going to be so bad. And so like learning to weather the ups and downs. This is like what we're doing now in real time, is like learning to just be normal under these circumstances.
We're going to get into a couple of online narratives later on. Don't you worry.
Exciting.
Oh, wait, I got to jump in here. I think that the winning franchise's fans, I don't know any people who root for a winning team, but I think they are the most entitled bullshit people on the internet. And so maybe this is how we contribute as the, you know, sixth man to winning. It's like we just get out there and be really, really zesty and super like. We need that entitlement. Like every game, we're entitled to win.
I compared us online to white blood cells. When anybody comes at us, we swarm in massive numbers and we annihilate reliably. You know, like if you say anything, if you say that Sacramento, if you say that Beach Hut Deli is too expensive, which it is, we're coming for you. I paid $20 for a 6-inch and chips and soda today. That's by the crazy. Way, so maybe we're not going to get them as a sponsor.
Peach Head Deli is so good, though, I will say. This is not Spawn, but I wish it was.
It was our, like, peach pit growing up. It used to be called Beach House, I'll have you all know.
Oh, yeah.
And there was only one of them, and it was in Granite Bay.
I thought it started in Davis, anyway.
You wish.
Yeah. I should clarify, I'm not from Davis. I don't want anyone getting any wrong ideas. I'm from actual Sacramento. Anyway, carry on.
Well, I'm from Granite Bay, so I do want people getting the wrong idea. That's pretty embarrassing. The third game of this set was against Dallas, 129-113. My favorite game of this set, speaking of ethical wins, highly ethical win for the Kings. Really, really clamped down on defense in the second half and just blew them off the court with pace, you know. And like the difference between last night and tonight, honestly, is the Sacramento Kings experience this year, which is if they're hitting shots, they look like you want to die if you're playing against them. And if they're not hitting shots, they look like you can kill them pretty easily.
Yeah, that game, that was also my favorite game. And the moment when they started blitzing Luka, it was so satisfying because to me it was sort of evidence of like a brain diff where Brown trusted like the guys out there to execute this and then trusted that the Mavericks couldn't kill them in these 4-on-3s. And like, I think that bet is so smart because basically what you're doing is forcing them to play like faster, even more sped up in the half court, like make fast decisions. And then like you get the turnovers and those kill you against the Kings. And to me, the ability to do that with like a very bad defensive team is sort of one of like the, like I'm sure all offseason everyone talked about, you know, continuity. Should we sign one of the least ethical men of all time, Kyle Kuzma, yada, yada, yada. But then like the value of betting on that continuity is being able to have like a connected enough group to just like flip that switch and have everyone nail every rotation. And that like, I expected it to just be like first team to 150 wins. So it was kind of shocking to have like a real defensive moment, like turn it for the team.
Yeah, you wrote a piece about this last week about the continuity, you know, being a genuine strength for the Kings. That was like obviously the bet that they were making this offseason. And a lot of diaper fillers online were not happy about that. And, you know, here we are with at least some actionable intelligence that Monty McNair might know one or two things more than those of us morons out in the fucking groundling section.
Again, to return to the Pelicans game, Harrison Barnes, 3-6, hitting his catch and shoot threes. He's back. He's back. What a bargain contract.
I listen, I said it, and this is sports media, so I have to die on that hill no matter what. Harrison Barnes is good. I promise.
12 points is enough.
Honestly?
Who wants more than 12 points in a game?
He's just Harrison. Anywhere else, he'd be a 10. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. To your point about continuity and depth, at the end of the game, the Dallas game, Davion got some minutes. And, you know, he didn't have like a statistically gaudy run or anything like that. But it reminded me that, like, it's really nice to be able to use your specialists as specialists, you know? And that's kind of what he is at this point, unfortunately. I wish that wasn't the case because I love rooting for him. But, like, he can do one thing, which is guard small on-ball guards very well. And, like, he bothered Kyrie Irving And that at the end of the game where like that the opposition has had to work as hard as the Mavericks had to work to keep up with us, to keep like scoring. None of the role players for them were really hot. It was basically just Luka and Kyrie all game long. And so to get to the fourth quarter and then all of a sudden here's, you know, the fucking pit bull Davion Mitchell guarding you, like, that's a nice thing to have. And Davion, as difficult as it probably is for him personally to deal with kind of losing his rotation spot, like, it's an amazing card to be able to pull. Just like, hey, look at this different look that you haven't had to deal with all game.
And here we are now with Keon Ellis out, and here's Davion's opportunity again. You know, to your point, Dunk, he came in after not playing for like three games, and I'm not exaggerating, instantly bottled up Kyrie on the first possession, the first defensive possession he played. He did exactly, Duncan, what you shouted out, I think, on the episode last week, where he, you know, Kyrie gets a little bit of penetration against him. He hits his body, he backs up, and Davion somehow recovers right up in his face, like immediately. That's something I don't see other guard defenders do anywhere.
Keegan's been doing that a little bit too, but it's like he's doing it on guys 3 inches shorter than him. But like, I think it's just because from the experience of watching Davion, especially in game two of that Warriors series, where like that sort of ability to recover when you really shouldn't and don't have like the leverage, and then all of a sudden he's there. That's been the exciting thing about the Keegan leap. Someone said online about that specific play that it's like, it looked like he was defending for his career, which is a dark thing to think about, but that was a crazy possession. It was so good.
Yeah, Keegan, speaking of Keegan, man, I mean, a big difference, obviously, you know, that's it's been kind of well documented lately that he guarded, like Rasae Fox said online, that he guarded De'Aaron every single day this summer, and it looks like it, honestly. And beyond that, this is a buff boy. He's a buff fella. He's big now.
He like said he feels more athletic too, which is wild.
Oh yeah, I feel like I have the potential to go out there and become an MVP one of these days, probably.
The one other thing I want to say, just this is, I'm not like breaking any news here, but I did kind of turn an important sort of spiritual corner in that Dallas game. I just hate Luka Doncic so much. He's just so annoying and miserable to watch. He's like if James Harden wasn't weird, you know, in a way that's amusing. And he's just this shameless foul merchant. All he does is work the refs all game. I know that that's like part of the game, and you do have to kind of respect that usually. But I genuinely feel like there were a couple plays, I tweeted something about this, where I'm like, this dude needs someone in his life to tell him how embarrassing he looks. Because it's crazy sometimes. You're like, this is like fucking a fourth grader out there just pissing and moaning. And it's genuinely like, look, I'm not a moralist. I'm not out here being Skip Bayless or whatever. But but he is like damaging the game of basketball, in my opinion. Like he is making me feel sad when I watch him. And I love this game more than anything in the world. And I the spiritual corner I was referring to is that I'm actually glad I don't have to root for this guy. Now that Fox has turned into what he has clearly turned into and is playing like an MVP candidate minus tonight, I would not take Luka. Like I just, as a guy who cares more about vibes than anything, I could not handle rooting for that shit. I would just be so depressed.
Yeah, like I talked about the decision to blitz Luka and stuff. That is so effective because everyone else on that court has just spent the preceding three quarters just standing there watching him do the most unethical Hooper shit for 19 seconds. And on an aesthetic level, I completely buy your critique. Like, the Mavs are just poison to watch.
And also, I think the other reason that the blitz works is that Luka himself is so used to just grinding people, you know, like he just gets into your body and backs into you. So he doesn't have any of that going around people instinct in him. So he kind of looked like a deer in headlights a couple of times when there were people fully blocking his path in both directions, because, you know, he looks like he fucking just smoked a pack of cigarettes. So like, why would he just attempt running around somebody to get to the rim?
When his shit is not working, it's profoundly funny.
It's so bad. And like, he had the shirt on, and he's kind of trying some new facial hair stuff, and he just looks like Mummy's cheeky boy. It's just a bad vibe all around. That team confuses me in a lot of ways. Like, I sort of like the idea of them trying to get more normal and like get younger and like acquire guys who can do like exactly one thing on offense, but then be like versatile, switchy defender guys. I also just think at some point Luka's going to get annoyed mostly with himself and then do some transference onto the team and then engineer like a really weird exit. I don't know. I can't take them seriously.
Not to mention the fact that everyone they've added in the last year is like an annoyingness force multiplier. You added Kyrie and then you had Grant Williams in the offseason. Like, oh my God, the vibes.
I love Grant Williams. He's great.
Explain yourself.
It all kind of started when the Celtics drafted him when Kyrie was still there. And his mom is famously like a NASA scientist. Like he was going to go to Harvard or some shit before Tennessee.
Oh shit, I didn't know that.
And so it was just the idea of the Celtics drafting like an avowed round earther that I just found so funny. I also just like how weird his game is. Like he is like the best Giannis stopper they had just because he had a huge ass. His movement style is like all weird. Sometimes he gets like, he's like one of those good defenders who gets cooked in the most embarrassing ways, like once or twice a game. He randomly had that one game seven where he hit a million threes. There's just something sort of honest and workmanlike about his very dishonest game that I find sort of like the performance of it fascinating. In that way, he's kind of the perfect Dallas Maverick. And as he's like the only normal wing on their team, he's playing like the day before they played the Kings, I think he had 40 minutes against the Bucks. Like because it's either him or Derek Jones Jr. or Omax Prosper or some shit, like, he's just going to be out there forever and they're going to kill him this season.
Yeah, Grant is, I think he's an example of like the opposite of what we were talking about earlier with big men that don't know how to play basketball. Yeah. You know, like Grant Williams, he just is always doing something that you're like, God damn it. Like, why was Grant Williams able to do that? Like he gets a put back and you're like, that guy can jump. Like how does he get off the ground when his legs weigh 400 pounds?
That was such a good Domas game. I was just thinking he was perfect 10 of 10 or 12 of 12 or something from two. But just thinking about how, you know, when a guy has a performance like that, it's usually just all at the rim or it's all in the same way or there's some amount of forcing at that volume. But everything was just perfectly in the context of the offense. Like when he had to rip and run, he was doing that. When he was like mashing guys in the post, he was doing that. He had that like one huge hook over Lively that was so cool. This is sort of a rambling point, sorry, but I was thinking about that in the context of Fox's increased scoring and usage this season, how none of that ever really feels out of the normal flow of the offense. Like it's not, the only times Fox is really taking over is late in the fourth quarter in close games, which is like what he should be doing. But it's cool to see the offense evolve in a way where it's like, they're still moving the ball, attacking at the right times, but the best shot we could get sometimes is Domas trying to go through two guys from 8 feet out. And it reminds me less in like degree of it working, but sort of like Jokic realizing last season that like actually the best shot is sometimes me just taking like a 10 footer.
Yeah, there's something that I have noticed that sparked Pete Carril era memories for me, which is Domas is a little, I haven't seen it like super consistent, but he's becoming more confident shooting that like elbow extended Chris Webber, like 15 to 17 footer. If he's got that consistently in his bag, that opens up a whole new dimension for him, because similar to the fact that he's no longer at least afraid to shoot a couple threes a game, but whether he's hitting them or not, just keeping defenses honest in that way. If he's able to start backing you down in the high post, turn around and hit a jumper, that's with a Fox on your team. That is a very, very scary proposition.
Yeah, they win that series last year if he does that like six times. The Domas thing, have you guys noticed this where when he's shooting the little like almost push shot, it seems like his guide hand isn't even on the ball. It seems like a straight up one. Have you noticed this? Okay, it's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, his whole game is just like he seems to be from the 1950s, you know, like everything that he does in a way that's slightly less fluid and cool looking than modern NBA players. But he was 13 of 15 in the Dallas game, and his two misses were both 3-point attempts. So it works.
This is partly, I think, why he's so unpopular online, that and him being a large white guy, like, who's as good as he is. There's a lot of, like, resentment towards him, I have discovered, and I think both of those things factor into that. Speaking of online, we're just going to kind of cover online bullshit for the rest of this episode.
Sounds great.
One thing that was very fun and tasty that came out today, Shams, the greatest news reader of all time, a guy who literally says two words on a mic and you just feel so sorry for him. I have like a theater school Vietnam flashbacks of just like, please, please don't perform. Please, sir, please don't perform or write. You only tweet. That's what you're for. Anyway, he reported that Sacramento is like the trade destination so far. They are very aggressively working the phones, according to him. And, you know, there's the typical OG and Pascal rumors that never, ever, ever, ever end. And then there's this new kind of Zach LaVine wrinkle. I was wondering, Patrick, if you had any thoughts on any of those three or any other kind of dreams that might be out there.
If they can get either of the Raptors guys, I'd be into it. I'm sort of curious about what the price would be because I think both of them are going to be free agents this summer, if I recall correctly. Maybe Pascal is another year in his deal or something. But I mean, if you're giving up anything more than like one first round pick, I mean, even then for like guys who aren't signed long term, I worry. But from just a pure basketball perspective, if it's something like, I don't know, Colby Jones, a couple picks, salary filler, whatever, like, to me, that seems super worth it. Like, that's exactly, if you think about like what they need, they just need, like, if Harrison Barnes was like really good, they'd be like a perfect team, basically. Because then you can play small, but like meaningfully defend more than like two types of teams. And both of those guys are like, I mean, Pascal's a very different player, but like Pascal loves to run. Like, he's a huge transition freak. His arms are so long, but he throws these passes where they're like perfectly extended to his sprinting teammates. Like, I think he'd just be like absolutely the perfect guy. And I've been watching a lot of the Raptors this season, just hoping they lose so they get a little more desperate to trade one of them. But like,
for sure,
I think they owe their pick to the Spurs. Maybe it's lottery protected. So at some point they're going to make like a pretty hard decision about like, we're either giving this up or we're not. I don't know. But Levine, I don't want Levine at all.
Yes, same here.
Unserious man.
Duncan, any thoughts on any of that?
I guess I'll go with the last part. I have been in the Zach LaVine is underrated camp for a while. He's efficient and he's an incredible athlete, which is a nice thing to have with a team that is as fast as we are.
A good cutter too.
Plus defenses for nerds.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he played a little defense for Team USA this past year. But yeah, I don't think that he is an elite defender. And weirdly, like, if you look at the recent championship teams, almost all of them had a guard that was the offense guard and a guard that was the defense guard. You know, like, it's been Kentavious Caldwell-Pope twice for the Lakers and the Nuggets. It's been Alex Caruso for the Lakers. It's been Drew Holiday fills both of those roles. So, like, I don't know that there is a team that has one at all recently that has had two guards who are just like, we're gonna run you out of the gym on offense. And that's what it would be if Fox and LaVine were together. Having said that, our current starting two guard, I guess, is Kevin Huerter. So like, we can't really say that we're in that position already and we would be losing it. So I don't know. Like, I wouldn't tear my hair out if they went and got Zach LaVine, just because I do think that he's a very good player overall and that we are pretty close to being a very good team. So
of course. I mean, it's easy when, you know, when Patrick and I like sort of summarily dismiss the idea that we should get LaVine to assume that we mean he's not a good player. He's a great player and he would be a great fit in a lot of places. It's just that contract is very large. And given the salaries we're already carrying and the fact that we're going to need to pay Keegan, and, you know, according to all the reporting in the midst of all of these trade rumors, Keegan is untouchable, which is obviously comforting and sensible. He's a building block for us, clearly. And his defensive improvement this year, you know, speaks to the soundness of that thinking. The other thing that was really funny in this Shams just abysmal roundtable thing that he did was he had, for some reason, it was like there was a host, there was Shams, there was Chandler Parsons, and there was Lou Williams. And Chandler Parsons was just sort of like doing the AJ Hawk thing. He was just like being red and like nodding.
Aggressively standing.
Yeah. Looking very January 6th-ish. And then Lou Williams was just there kind of like smirking and like making like little like pout faces and being like, I don't know. Sacramento's pretty boring. It seems like they're going to have a hard time drawing free agents. And he forgot that the question was about trades. and so, of course, he says like, you know, players don't want to go to Sacramento. But he did. I mean, he backtracked a little and he's like, they like it when they get there. The basketball environment's amazing. So like, credit to him there. But Maybe the issue with that, Kings fans just lost their minds and were like, the disrespect. Maybe the issue there is that Lou Williams doesn't quite have the juice as a broadcaster. Maybe Lou Williams is not going to be a guest on the Purple and Black Pill.
Yeah, I heard you guys have been DMing. I'm sorry that he ruined it for himself. But,
you know, sometimes you think you're dealing with Sweet Lou and you're really dealing with Sour Lou.
You try to do a guy a favor.
I think it's one of those things where, like, because the basketball, quad basketball, was so bad for so long, like, free agents don't want to sign in situations like that. And I think that leads to this like sort of mutually reinforcingness about like the small market and the bad basketball. And like, okay, they don't want to go for either. And they're both so much worse. Yeah, I kind of consider that most of that not my problem.
Yeah.
Especially because the best two players are locked up and like love it here so much. And this was like sort of how it was in the early 2000s too. Like when the team is good, people want to stay. And we're seeing, there's sort of an interesting, I don't really know how to term this, but like Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is like one of the swaggiest dudes in the NBA and is just like totally locked in with OKC.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, honestly, the only example that maybe bucks this trend is Utah, but pretty much everyone seems kind of down to stay where they'll make the most money if they're really worth it. Like, obviously, market plays into it, but I feel like we're sort of in a post that mattering so much time.
Yeah, I think it, with the NBA, like, it strikes me that the players, like, there's so few of them. It's such this weird little rarefied community that I think that there's a lot of sort of, I don't know, like it's clickiness or something. It's really just one click. But like I think they have a lot more conversations between themselves that aren't part of the media narrative that mm-hmm. then decide what is sort of conventional wisdom about, you know, whether a city is cool or whatever else. And I think that attitude is probably, like you said, going to go away a little bit just because the contracts now are so rich that like, how could you have a bad time living in Oklahoma City if you have $200 million and you're 24 years old or whatever Shea is? Like, it really doesn't matter because in the season, you're just playing basketball. And then in the off season, you're just so rich. Like, whereas the generation of basketball players that might have decided that it's not that cool to live in Sacramento, like, those guys were thinking about opening car dealerships when they retired and stuff. So I
totally.
Just, I think it's a much different ball game in that respect.
I have one word that may affect King's free agency going forward, may kind of flip the script on this narrative. And that word is beam, beam, beam.
I thought you say Beach Hut Deli.
That's three words.
No, you can hyphenate it.
We're going to go Deuce and Mo on this. We're going to find a way, even though I talk shit about their pricing, to get them to pay us, at least in sandwiches.
It's like seeing the Kings fan reaction to that is like unsurprising. You know, it's not fun to just keep hearing the Cowtown shit over and over again. But I thought like one of the most fun parts of last season was how long it took everyone to come around. And you get these national media types, these like, you know, ESPN people who just basically like don't take them seriously at all, finding out in like February, like, oh, they have some shit going on here. And just being able to be smug about it for the first time. And like, this is maybe a very arrogant question, but how did the playoff games sound on TV? Because from my experience, I would open up Twitter during the games on Press Row and stuff and just see everyone I know who like isn't normally a basketball fan being like, Sacramento sounds like they're going to go down to City Hall and tear that motherfucker down brick by brick. Like, there is some shit going on here. And it was just so fun to see everyone like discover just like how crazy it all was. So I feel like we should have a certain sense of pride in dum-dums like Lou Williams saying stuff like that. Like, it's fun. This is our thing. Nobody likes us. We don't care.
That's the lesson, is that like, if you're not approaching this with a sense of humor, you're doing it wrong. Like, our superpower is that we are impervious to this because we have suffered more than anyone on this earth in the last 20 years as sports fans.
Yeah.
Let me qualify that. And, you know, that has engendered, at least in me, literally I'm bulletproof. Like, if you are trying to talk shit to me, it is either funny or pay no mind, you know?
Yeah, and we're also in this gap where we're playing with house money in terms of like reputation, because if we were to fail, it's not like anybody in the national conversation would be like, wow, the King's really disappointed. They'd be like, yeah, King's gonna king, was whatever, you know, like, so the downside of potentially failing is not that bad, but the upside of surprising people is incredible. Like, we can fool them again. Like, we finished third in the West last season and we can still take people by surprise.
The only downside is not getting to grab my crotch in the general direction of Warriors fans, who are somehow simultaneously so arrogant and so insecure. It's just beyond. I only have one topic left tonight, and it is more online bullshit. It's something that almost slipped through the cracks for most people. Mark Stein of the Stein Line reported, I think this was like 2 days ago, that the Wizards are likely to move on from Jordan Poole.
Wait, I thought that was fake. Is that real?
Is it fake? Oh, fuck. Well, that would make sense.
Did you get ball sacked?
I saw a community note about this.
I haven't updated my Twitter app in like 2 years, so it's still Twitter for me. I don't even have community notes. I don't even know barely what that is.
Oh, wow.
Well, you know, I guess this speaks to Elon's vaunted leadership that he, you know, has instituted this this truth serum online. And I fell for it. But either way, poor Jordan. Oh, my God.
I mean, this is
just about the most predictable thing any of us could have imagined who watched that playoff series last year.
Did you see him walking the dog up the court in a 10-point game with 4 minutes left? It was so funny. He's like, I'm really happy. He's the perfect man for this moment because everyone spent the offseason being like, okay, the Wizards will be ass, but he might average 33 a game. And instead, he's just like, he's doing comedy bits out there. I love, as an aesthetic experience, like the one where he was like kind of backing down Kristaps Porzingis, but somehow getting pushed further and further out. And then like took like a four-step back and just got it blocked by like Kristaps' elbow. It was just so good. Like, he's so funny. I love him.
I mean, just the most unserious franchise. And like, you know, I know what I'm talking about when I say that. Yeah. They have really assumed the mantle of Kangsdom. And oh my good Lord, that is just a dumpster fire out there.
They got like 5 second-round picks for Beal and didn't get a first somehow. I mean, I guess no trade clause, whatever. But like, it's just the eagerness to just burn it down, but in this really funny way. I really respect it as like a student of the game of dumb shit.
Even if they had gotten a first, it would have been Johnny Davis, right? Like,
I mean, their highest aspiration before this in like the Caron Butler Gilbert era was like a 5 seed. And, you know, now they are aspiring, I guess, to be exactly what the Kings were, which is like the 7th pick for 10 years.
I was thinking today about the Russell Westbrook Wizards season and just how like synesthetically off-putting that was. And I'm just thinking, like, in 2 years when Russ is like still in the league, you'll see like on Twitter, you'll see like a photo of him in a Wizards jersey and be like, wow, that Photoshop's actually pretty good. Like, it looks like wore that jersey for real.
Right next to your Michael Jordan Wizards jersey.
Poole is like, he's the funniest one, but don't underrate Kuzma.
Yeah.
Very fun, very funny guy. I do feel a little bad that he chose to stay there, so that's fine.
He's having a great time. I love it when he wears like one of those like Pussy Riot masks to a game or whatever. He's like fucking dressed like a luchador, or he's like, it's so funny. There's so many of these guys, like Russell Westbrook's an example, who are like these self-styled fashionistas, and they just look like shit. They just look like a joke. Yeah, and then Malik Monk is out here dripped to the nines every game, and he gets no credit. What is this? Malik is the most stylish person in the league easily.
It's always funny when you see like the tunnel picks and it's like Malik just doing something nuts, and then every other person basically in like a sweatsuit, and then Harrison Barnes in like an actual suit.
Right.
It's, yeah, the degrees of difference are very funny there.
Harrison Barnes just currently running for mayor.
The last baby boomer in the league, Harrison Barnes.
Yeah. There's a tough schedule coming up, right? It's Pelicans, Wolves, Warriors, or maybe there's one more in there?
Yes, Warriors, but the good news about what's coming up this week is that there's only 2 games between now and next Tuesday, so we do get a little bit of a respite here. You know, obviously we're finishing up a 6-game road trip, which is no easy feat, obviously. And New Orleans and Minnesota are obviously no joke. Minnesota is absolutely playing amazing. The Rudy Gobert thing that we all laughed at, Minnesota fans are very justly throwing right back in our face because he looks like Rudy Gobert again.
Kick the shit out of the Knicks tonight, and who have been killing everyone.
Yeah, that's a serious, serious team. Anthony Edwards is obviously, you know, doing Michael Jordan shit every night. That's a scary proposition for the Kings as a potential playoff opponent for sure. Rudy would cause serious problems for us.
And I mean, the Kings have matched up with the Wolves terribly. I mean, last year, I think they lost at least 3 games to them. And I remember the home potential playoff clincher and how much weird nervous energy was in the building that night. And just seeing Jaden McDaniels, who's basically the only guy, Herb Jones has given Fox problems, but McDaniels gives Fox the most problems. And just seeing him as like, he changes the game with he's like one of these few wing defenders who just destroys you.
Yeah.
They're a shocking team.
Now that they've got Conley, their roster is just so incredibly well-balanced. That Conley, yeah. That D'Lo Conley trade was just a miracle for them.
Talk about unserious, guys. Yeah, if the Kings can win one of these next 2 games, I'll be thrilled with the road trip. I don't expect them to win either. But that Warriors game, that's a like, that's a must win in my heart.
Draymond's back.
Combat, exactly. And just having to see the good version of the Warriors, and then like they're playing the Rockets right now, and they've lost, I think, 6 in a row, and just seeing just how stupid and flimsy and small and all these things that like I think Kings fans wanted to pay off in games against the Kings, now like paying off against other teams. It just, it makes me mad, and I want them to win by like 70. They deserve it.
That is a perfect place to leave it for tonight. That is all we have. Thank you so much, Patrick, for joining us. As always, first two-time Challenge Coin Collector. We can't wait to have you back.
Yeah, I'll be back. Thanks for having me.
And anything you need to plug before we jump off?
Yeah, just check out defector.com. I have a big thing about basketball media coming at some point in the next few weeks, so keep an eye out for that.
You're not going to burn us on that, are you?
No, definitely not.
Are you going to fuck us on this deal, dude?
Definitely not. You can trust me. Just don't use the Command F feature when you're in the blog.
The glurple and black pill. Just protect the innocent. That's it for us. Like I said, Wednesday at New Orleans, Friday at Minnesota. We will see you again. Same purple and black pill time, same purple and black pill station next week. So long, my friends. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Peace.
Doesn't seem to matter what I do. I'm always number two. No one knows how hard I tried. Oh, oh, I have feelings that I can't explain. Driving me insane. All my life been so polite, but I'll sleep alone tonight. 'Cause I'm just kidding. Anywhere else I'd be a 10. Is it my destiny to live and die a life of blonde fragility? I'm just kidding. Where I see love, she sees a friend. What will it take for her to see the man behind the tan and fight for me?
There it is.
Woo! Leave it in the edit.
That's how you start. Oh my God, that felt terrible.